Thanks for listening to this Arrow FM podcast shared on accessmedia.nz with the support of New Zealand On Air.
Greetings everyone. You're listening to part two of Avant Gardens, Leisure Gardens, coming to you from the Wairarap in New Zealand. I'm Margaret Crawford. And these programs explore gardens developed for leisure and not necessarily for production of food. We're going to be looking at leisure gardens that have been designed for specific purposes, like for sensory gardens. But today I'm going to welcome back our internationally travelled sister, actually it's my sister, Catherine Grant-Smith. Hello, Kath.
Hi, thanks for inviting me.
Yes. Well, Catherine has been all over the world. I mean, we can virtually count the places you've been to in the last 3 months. But what we want to talk a bit about is your visit to England. So you stayed with people in villages and in suburban gardens, small towns.
Yes, the suburban gardens. Yes.
So what are they like at the moment? You were there in summer.
I was there in June, and it was the beginning of a very, very hot summer. If you'd watched the news, you would have seen Europe itself was burning. It was so hot.
Oh, it's just climate change, I bet.
Definitely
you.
Climate change. I mean, to have 30 degrees is quite hot to be in England. Mm. Anyway, but it was very pretty, as usual, you know, the very soft gardens that they do have. What you did notice was the scorched grass.
Already in June?
Yes, already in June. Let me just tell you about the second one I went to first. I'll tell you about that first. The second was a little village called Fladbury. Now, Fladbury only has about 700 inhabitants, but it's been there for a long time because it's even mentioned in the Doomsday Book.
Is it like one of those ones from Midsummer Murders?
Similar. I think if I'd lived there long enough, definitely there would be
a murder.
Great plots of the... I met a writer who was busy writing her second book, and she just published it, and she was saying that a lot of her characters came from the village. I said, you must be careful, there's only 700 people, they'll know who you're talking about. Were there any murders? She says, well, there was a few hints, so I'm not sure exactly what goes on behind the lovely facade. But the little garden that I stayed with, the house was not a historical house, it was probably about 40 years old, I would say, maybe less than that, but it had its own little garden at the back. Now, the interesting thing that I found is in Britain, a lot of the houses don't really have a garden in front. They seem to have either parking or just a small entrance or something like that. But my friend is actually a florist, and so she had beautiful hanging baskets, and I mean, just a pot of geraniums that burst into, it was just glorious. And then you went through the house and into the back, and there it was, a teeny-weeny little garden, not really big at all. But in that garden it had borders, lots of colour, lots of perfume, lots of fragrances in the evening, bird life, and so on. And tucked in the corner was, of course, the proverbial little bench where you could sit and just contemplate.
Oh, how lovely.
So...
Yes.
The reason that those gardens are so lovely is Fladbury's known as a little garden village. It's on the edge of the Cotswolds. It's near to Evesham. That's the biggest town, and Pershore. So it's on the edge, but what it does have is a community spirit. And the first time I went there was in 1996, and when we arrived, they were just going into the walkabout weekend. And this time was also the walkabout weekend. And it is literally a walkabout. People come from all over and they walk through gardens. They use little individual gardens that people have. The church has a floral display. The first time we went, it was floral displays around biblical references. This time was around the activities of the village.
Oh, so they take a theme.
They take themes, yes.
Oh,
they take a theme.
Okay.
So the activities would be the knitting club or the woman who wrote the book, and so on. And then they would, you know, have this floral decoration that had books or it had knitting and so on.
Was that set up in the church?
That was in the church.
Okay.
Unfortunately, I didn't stay long enough to actually do the walkabout this time, but I have before. And then they'll have, like, people who live there have these sort of older cars. I mean, her husband had a Morgan, a beautiful Morgan. And it's open top, little sort of sports car, individually made and so on. And, but, you know, people walk about, but they walk into the gardens. That was the whole point.
Yes.
So she was getting a little bit uptight because this very, very hot weather was, you know, scorching, as I say, the grass. Mm. I still hinted, why don't you just spray the grass green? And she was shocked. But never mind. So that was that sort of garden. And it's also a village that has allotments. So really not even a 100 metres from her front door.
Now, let's just allotments. We have mentioned it in a previous programme. But allotments are usually owned by the council. And they're literally a piece of land.
Yes.
Not very big.
Probably about 2 acres, I would say.
Oh, as much as... No, you mean each...
Each person is a few hundred square metres.
Yeah, that's right.
And they've had one before, but now her husband passed away a few years ago, so they don't have one now. But we went and walked through the allotments. And it's really interesting because, as I say, the gardens themselves are small in the village. But you go out there and you do your thing. So you have your little shed, and you keep your things in the shed. And this one particular neighbor was an ex-South African, so he has his shed with his little barbecue.
Okay.
So he can
grow.
Yes, and he can grow his little grapevines and his olive tree and remind him of Africa. But people grow a lot of cut flowers there.
Yes, I was going to say, it's no longer, I mean, originally allotments were food.
Yes.
It was.
Particularly during the war.
During the war. I mean, they dug up the parks of London to grow.
Yes.
Yes.
So the vegetables were suffering. Because the problem is
water.
The water is not laid on. It's not municipal water. You have tanks. So you literally have to carry buckets or some kind of container. And they're not really these pathways. There's not roads in between.
Yes.
So you carry this, fill up your tank, like a storage tank, and water from there. But, I mean... To water a big piece of ground like that takes a lot of water.
Yes, especially vegetables, you've got to keep going. Yes,
yes. And of course, it was the drought that was starting.
Yes.
But the allotments are lovely. I think that is therapeutic.
Yes.
If you want to have people who can spend hours, instead of the retired husband sitting watching TV and he's out there doing a little bit of digging and so on, I think it's fantastic.
Absolutely. Mm. But you know, I think community gardens can take that part as well because. Well, in New Zealand, we've got a lot of land around us, and a lot of houses do have enough for a garden.
Mm.
But it's also the community thing, because allotments, people chat to each other, and they talk, and it's a little, you don't necessarily work on each other's plots or little areas, but it's the fact you're all together.
That's right. And these little sheds become the little man's places.
A little man shed.
His man shed. He's got his little chair, and he... And sit with his feet up and maybe have a beer or a cup of tea.
Yes.
So.
And get away from the wife.
Yes.
So this little village, now are all the gardens basically at the back? Or do they have some that are in the front?
I didn't really see many that were in the front. Because, you know, if you go through the UK in particular, most of the houses seem to be built quite close to the road.
But also those long terraces... Mm. Those front gardens, which were very popular in the 50s, were done away with because it was certainly parking. Called a motor car case.
Yes, they became and that, parking.
They became parking because they didn't have garages. So I always find it quite horrendous that you have three cars or two cars parked in front and you've got to go through that to get to the front door. And there's nothing, there's usually concrete or something exciting.
That's when they put those lovely hanging baskets
or pots,
something like that.
Just to brighten it up.
Yes, yes.
So were there old traditional houses at all?
Yes, there were a few traditional, the ones that look like, you know, they're falling down, wooden beams and daub, you know, in between.
And very short, small doorways.
Yes. So there were quite a few of those, but the majority, I would say, were built in the last 60 to 80 years ago.
Yes.
I mean, the average age, it's always interesting to listen to the average age. The average age is in the 50s. So it's mostly retirees.
So not many children, is it?
They have a little primary school.
Okay.
Do have a primary school. And obviously a beautiful church. Absolutely beautiful. And they have two pubs, a very good butcher, and then sort of a little general store where you can get your milk and your newspapers.
Okay.
But otherwise, people go out to shop in Evesham or wherever.
Well, that's also changed because those little villages, most people will end up with a motor car.
They used to have a bus, but now the bus doesn't work anymore because too many people have motor cars.
Yes. And the supermarket's usually a central one on near a bigger town.
Yes.
And you drive to it.
Yes.
But the business of the gardening, so are most people interested in gardening?
Yes, very much so. That's why it's known as a garden village.
Oh, how lovely.
It's people spend a lot of time and effort in their garden.
Yes.
I would think the nursery does very well.
I think gardening is one of the most popular activities in Britain. Still is.
It still is. Well, there's so many gardening programs on the TV and so on.
And magazines and things like
that.
And it's very easy.
I mean, they have such an array of plants.
Yes. Well, now, one of our previous programs, we talked about the movement of plants, you know, the plant hunters.
Yes.
And how they've come from all over the world.
Yes.
And as we were mentioning, I mean, even in New Zealand, a lot of these plants have been brought in, the rhododendrons and the azaleas and the clematis. Those all came from the east. And then there was all those South African plants that happened to just creep around everywhere, including my favorite blue ones, the
agapanthers.
We all laugh about it.
But you see, the trouble is that that's when things become, they clash with the endemic plants.
Yes.
And then you have invasive, we have in South Africa, is the blue gum.
Invasive. And they were brought in
to dry up soil, especially around farmhouses.
Yes.
You go to old farmhouses, you'll always see eucalyptus trees.
Yes.
And it really was to make the area dry. But unfortunately, it's now got into a lot of natural areas and so that and pine trees.
I know.
But going back to other gardens, you want me to tell you about the first one? Okay, so the first house I went to stay in is completely different. That was probably about half to three quarters of an acre. And it was in a town called Harpenden, which is actually a commuter town just north of London. And it's got a population of about 30,000 people.
Oh, right.
So it's spread out and beautiful. And this house that I stayed in is a particularly beautiful area. It's like, I would say, just an enclave of pretty wealthy people. So this is almost like a park-like garden. Lots of borders, pathways, hidden corners, huge hedge. I'm not sure. I'm trying to find out what the name of the tree is because it's a tree hedge. That's how thick it is. And very private. Also at the back of the house, interestingly enough, front of the house is she's got two little chairs which during COVID they sat and talked to the neighbours. I think they had megaphones because the neighbours are quite far. There was more wildlife. There were a lot of birds and there were squirrels, obviously, foxes, other creepy, crawly animals, which I'm not quite sure of, you know.
No snakes.
But the interesting thing is that that's also a house that I've been to over the last 30, 40 years. And when we first went there, I didn't notice that there's actually a railway line at the end of the garden. And it's one of the main lines into London. So you must know those commuter trains come past in the morning and in the evening fast and frequently. But they had built the last probably, I'd say, 30 metres. It's a forest.
Okay.
So they've got trees and everything. So you don't really hear them.
That's the other thing is trees and bush.
Takes the sound away. Yes.
It's a cushion.
So it cushions it. Lots of benches to sit and contemplate. I don't think I'd garden at all. I think I'd just sit in the garden. I mean, I don't think I'd physically dig anything.
Yeah.
She does have help.
Yes.
There's no way she could have done it on her own.
Right.
And her husband's also in a rest home. So, you know, these are people who've lived there. Their children have grown up there. And now the house is really too big. But it is.
And you say, what, it's got borders and...
Borders. And very well established.
Right.
Yeah.
Yes, because what I always loved about the English gardens, their borders look great. I'd plant a border and then it sort of half dies.
Yes, and well, then they're very dense.
Yes.
And they have big trees, smaller plants, shrubs, so on.
Yep.
And clivias.
Yes.
Clivias are South African plants.
Yes. So you
and I found that quite funny because she said she didn't know how to cope with it. It was going to seed. And then I'm trying to explain to her how you can actually grow more clivias. And she wasn't interested at all because she felt it was already too much. It's a bit like the agapanthus taking over.
Right, because clivias are beautiful. You grow them here too.
Yes.
They like a shade and a bit of dampness.
Yes.
So that garden. Now, then you went on to Northern Ireland. And what were their gardens like?
Well. Belfast. Very typically British, really. You know, also wide driveway, sort of house, a frontal, and then you go to the back. And you remember, if you watch any of the programs about how you alter houses in Britain, you have bifold doors into the garden.
And a patio.
Yes. And then this lovely, lovely little house, a lovely garden, with a little shed at the bottom and little borders around it. A very English look as well.
Yeah.
But a little bit more modern, because there was the big deck to have your barbecue.
Okay, so that was a more outdoor living. Yes. Which is, and what we've also talked about, how gardens have changed.
Yes, that people use their gardens.
For different things.
It's not just looking at it, they actually live in their gardens. And then, of course, I went to the farming area in County Tyrone, and there you don't have time for gardens, really.
No.
You're farming. So they've just lawns, and the thing that tickled me the most was the remote lawn mower had a name. I think he was called Charlie. And Charlie just, he looked like a sort of...
Did they look like a flying saucer type thing?
Yes, but he had eyes on him. So he comes over a little thing, and I'm thinking, gee, this grass is so lovely, and they must have sheep or something. No, it's little Charlie. And when he gets tired, he finds his little recharging place, goes and recharges automatically, and then goes back and cuts the grass. I mean, just amazing.
I thought that was my husband. No, he doesn't do that. No. But they do have them here as well. And I always think, don't they get lost in your garden?
Well, they seem to know how to get out of corners.
Okay.
Because I've seen people who've had these ones in the house, and they get stuck under the sofa, and that's a problem. So here, these ones seem to have a bit more brain, and they manage to get out. But their gardens in Northern Ireland, they have a lot of rain. I mean, when they talk about the Green Isle, you'll know why. Because it's almost constant mist.
Yes.
And gentle rain.
Yes.
I did have a few days of bright sunshine, and everybody complained. I think their eyes aren't accustomed. The one farm I went to, the wife was more keen on gardening, but it was a lot of like hanging baskets, pots.
Okay.
Not borders. Yes. They didn't have borders.
Yes.
Very sadly, I went to see the house where my father was born, which has gone down generation to generation. And it is in rack and ruin. But that had a garden, because it had a walled garden in the front, and it had roses. And now the roses have gone wild.
Oh.
It looks like these sort of gothic films you see, you know, behind the garden wall. So
yes.
Obviously in times past,
but
they
that,
would have
if
had
you looked up
formal gardens.
Yes, I was going to say, if I looked up, because it's our dad, so
yes.
They, you know, if you go up to the census and you go back, and I think the first one I could find was 1911, and of course they register who's in the house.
Yes.
And one of the things is that they had servants.
Yes.
They always had servants.
Yes.
So these were farmers that were not mechanized, because the later farmers became very mechanized and the labourers moved into town.
Mm.
So they would have had help to
That's
garden.
That's right.
Okay.
Yes.
Oh, lovely.
Yeah.
So, yes. And then you went on. You could also do a whole program on airports, but we won't do that now.
That's another story.
Yes. No, we're not going to talk about airports or flights that get cancelled or anything like that. We'll talk about good things. So now you went on across the Atlantic. No, was it Atlantic?
Yes,
the Atlantic.
To Canada.
To Canada.
So I went to Vancouver, and my daughter lives in the most glorious part. It's North Vancouver. It's the base of the mountains. You do have signs that make you a little bit worried that say, beware of bears and coyotes and sort of wildlife, really wild. So, but the garden they have is very small because they live in a forest. Although it's suburbia, they have these massive trees around them. I still try to ask one of the grandchildren, how many logs do you think you could get out of this tree? And she looked at me a bit peculiar. And I just said, well, you know, to me, I've never seen a tree this high. You probably could build a house out of it.
I think what's interesting, Kath, is all these different climates you've been through. So You came from the Western Cape, which was going into winter, which is the cold, wet winter. Not as bad as New Zealand winter. I wouldn't say bad, but not as wet and frosty as especially the Western Cape. And then you went up into to Britain, which is summer, but it was early summer.
It was early summer, and it was, as I say, the beginning dry. Of really hot, yes. Hot summer.
We were in Britain once when it was so hot, and we went to one of these beautiful, you know, gardens up in Devon, I think it was, yeah, Roseburn or one of those. And while it is a beautiful garden, it was dry, and they were trying yes. to water all the time.
Yes, because their plants aren't accustomed to that.
No, they're not accustomed to it. So now we've crossed the Atlantic, and we're with those large trees and bears.
Yes. The one interesting thing, and I've noticed this before when we're visiting Canada, or that part of Canada, they have pop-up nurseries. So at the supermarket outside, you'll have a pop-up nursery, and you think, oh, that's wonderful. They're only there for about 2 months because they've got to plant it quickly, let it grow, and then the winter starts.
Oh, and they have snow and everything.
They have
yep.
snow, they have cold, and a lot of rain. The plants that you get, well, my daughter's working full-time, so, and her husband as well, so they don't have a lot of time to garden, so most of the things are perennials.
Okay.
And they'll have really pretty bushes. And interesting enough, hydrangeas.
Oh,
now, I always thought hydrangeas were more for warmer climates, but yes. they seem to have no, lovely, beautiful ones. Yes, lovely colours.
I must look up where they actually came from. But now, Kathy, you've done the round the world, and before we end up, because we're going to start rounding up, we shared a garden as children.
Yes.
And we grew up in Johannesburg. Yes. And Johannesburg is very high up. I mean, it's got a high altitude. But we had a wonderful garden. I mean, our mother was a gardener.
Yes, and our father.
And our father,
I
yes.
mean, we grew up with both parents working in the garden and enjoying it.
Yes, and I think that's a pastime that a lot of modern parents don't have the time for because
yes.
their children are at school or it's something going on. But, I mean, one of the memories are we were quite young and we had moved into this new house and it had been reconstituted the garden, I would say, because they all had these little round semicircular
driveway.
You came in yes. one side, I think, and Dad made it into two levels.
Mm.
So now you had a rockery. But where do you get the rocks from? So pile the children in the car in the weekend and off we go into the veld somewhere to pick up rocks. And that was how the rockery was formed, and then Mother planted all
yes,
the
which
plants.
Actually was like a border, if
yeah.
you think about it, because it was between the two levels, and that really, and lots of flowers.
That's right.
Yes. It was an old, remember there was a rose garden?
I was going to say.
A small rose garden.
Yeah, and an archway.
Yes.
And lots of fruit trees at the back.
Yes.
Which was, one of them was an apricot tree. So when we were visiting our old school friend over the weekend in Nelson, she remembered the sandwiches. We always had apricot sandwiches. The Harper girls were known for their apricot jam sandwiches. So perhaps on that note, we'll start ending. Catherine, thank you so much. You're going to be travelling back to was it the Floral Kingdom?
Yes, and the Cape Floral Kingdom, and hopefully warmer weather. But they've had a long, wet winter as well. So
thank you so much for all this, Catherine. You've given us a lot of information.
Oh,
thank you.
Thanks for having me.